Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. Look, right off the top, I'm going to make some open floor history here. Grab your Glocks, sit down, whatever else you might need to do. I need to issue an official apology. I never apologize for anything, but I need to issue an official apology for completely derailing the fantasy basketball podcast. Look, I wasted everyone's time. I came in with that bad attitude. I got bad results. And for that, I'm sorry. I mean, you put together a pretty good blueprint, a pretty good game plan, and I just sort of 1994 Scottie Pippened it. I sat on the sidelines. I didn't want in. And for that, I apologize. And I'm ready to bring the heat today.
Good. Did you tell me to grab my Glock at the outset there?
Yeah, you know, that's a rap phrase I heard.
Just grab your Glock and relax. No, look, you've been bringing the energy all day, so I'm excited to jump in here. But yes, the fantasy podcast was a bit of a disaster. We got halfway through. I kind of expected you to get into it as we went because I was confident, stupidly so, that you, once you figured out exactly what you were we were talking about, you would be into it. And then we started to get into some of the player comparisons, and you were just like, I don't really give a shit. We have the top 100 to settle these disputes.
No, I just flat out checked out. There's no doubt about it. I had a lot of reflection yesterday. You know, I take my hour of solace, and I was really thinking about it. And I realized that it was a poor fit because the name of the thing is fantasy, and yet I am not only Mr. Accountability, I'm also Mr. Reality. Like, you're out there throwing out, like, oh, do you want Steph Curry or Kyrie Irving? I'm like, you know, I think George Hill is just kind of like a more sensible option. You're like, okay, like, do you want to have, you could have a Lamborghini or you can have a Hummer. And I'm like, you know, the Nissan Leaf gets pretty good gas mileage. Like, I was re-listening to that podcast and I realized, frankly, how boring of a person I've become. I didn't like it. I mean, we're kind of past self-loathing at this point. I mean, you were throwing out all these, you know, comparisons. Do you want to be able to fly or would you rather be invisible? And I was like, well, the only superpower I really want is a good book and a nice cup of tea, you know? Like, it was embarrassing. And to be honest, you should have turned on me. You should have been like, look, the self is reaching self-parody here. Like, you're trying too hard to be, you know, yourself. You just need to, like, loosen up and let loose. I couldn't do it. And for that reason, and actually one other side reason I'm going to get to a second, I've decided as my way to atone, I'm going to become your fantasy basketball team's number one fan. I'm all in.
All right, great.
You're going to send me the roster. I'm going to check every single night at 12:30 a.m. to see how your guys are doing.
Listen, man,
I'm going to live vicariously through you. And the side reason, by the way, I'm atoning is because you still need to atone for the whole Westbrook thing. Like, you tried to make something out of nothing out of that, and you tried to skirt that issue. I'm still a little bitter about it, but here I am opening my soul to you and our listeners as well.
Good. Well, you're the best, and nobody ever wants you to change. And I share some blame for the disorganized fantasy basketball preview. We missed like half the questions. But we have a bunch of questions to get through today, so let's dive in because we're going from a Golliver loss to a Golliver win. Brad says, first time emailer, long time listener. I live in Australia and I've loved the NBA since 1992. I'm writing because Ben Golliver has been dropping some truth on Adam Silver and the NBA, and clearly the league is listening. He's talking about the All-Star changes. What do you think?
I don't even want the credit for this. I'm disgusted. Okay, so first of all, I did kind of call it though, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. You did. And I'm honestly, you would have been so unbearable if they had actually gone the full way and abolished conferences altogether and just taken the 24 best players. So I'm glad they didn't do that because I would have had to live with you bragging about it for the next 5 months.
And see, that's the thing. I don't think that they took my idea and tried to make me happy. I think they heard my idea and just tried to make me miserable. Because what they came up with, so first of all, for anyone who's not paying attention, I predicted there was going to be captains for the All-Star game. They were going to get rid of the Eastern and Western Conference. That's basically what they've done. But unfortunately, they haven't gotten rid of the player pools in the Eastern and Western conferences. So the underlying problem of just granting 12 spots to undeserving East players at the expense of all the better quality talents in the West that are consistently snubbed remains. We're just changing the names of the teams, probably to some sponsors. You know, you can imagine State Farm will probably be the new Eastern Conference, and Nike might be the Western Conference or whatever. So we have this big showy distraction of this captain's format. Everyone's going to chuckle over who LeBron drafts. Will he take Kyrie? You know, will Steph take Westbrook and all this? It's nonsense. We still don't have the best 24 players in the league, and you're going to have so many snubs this year from the Western Conference teams, and you're going to have just abysmal Eastern Conference roster. And so for that reason, I'm disgusted. I don't want any credit for calling it. And you know me, I always take credit. So this is an unusual situation.
Yeah, man, it's pretty tough. I was sort of lying there. I knew that Tuesday was rough all around between the fantasy podcast and then having Adam Silver let you down like that. You were pretty heated by the end of the afternoon. This is almost worse. Not that this is one thing where, like, the All-Star game, I think of the All-Star game the way you think of fantasy sports, because I truly don't give a shit about any of this. The All-Star game is going to be depressing in almost no matter what they do, because I think right now everybody is too rich and too famous to justify hurting themselves or embarrassing themselves in, like, a hungover exhibition game. So it's kind of an impossible problem to solve if they're trying to actually make this more entertaining. But the only thing that they could fix that would actually be good is to just, like, even out the selection process. Like, we really only need 5 or 6 All-Stars from the East in any given year over the last, like, couple of seasons. This year it's more extreme than it's ever been. So I just think that now it's gonna be like an overbranded, everybody plays it safe, sort of depressing situation with the All-Star game and like the selection show. Like, all this stuff sounds cooler in theory than it will be in practice.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, now we get to watch guys wearing sponsored jerseys play no defense, and we get to have the fake laughs and the chuckles and the chortles like we had that one time when Kobe and Shaq, you know, pretended to be friends and share the MVP award.
Historic amounts of fake laughter during the selection show.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to just call it right now that LeBron and Kyrie are somehow co-All-Star Game MVPs, I'm not going to stop you, because there's like a 97% chance that that happens. But you brought up the whole there should only be 5 or 6 guys from the East in the All-Star Game, and I think that's dead on. And I wanted to go through this with you just as a thought experiment quickly. If there was an unfettered draft of 24 players, so in other words, LeBron's, you know, he's one captain, Steph's the other captain, and we are really going through a draft, how many guys from the East and which guys from the East do you actually think get picked in the top 24 if they're really going to gun to win? I think Giannis gets picked. I think Kyrie gets picked. I think John Wall gets picked. I think Kyle Lowry gets picked. No?
Nope. I love Kyle Lowry, but I feel like if players are drafting, they're going to take a guy like Damian Lillard before Kyle Lowry.
Okay, what about Gordon Hayward?
Well, see, this is the thing. We can't gauge this through the players' eyes, because I could see players snubbing Hayward too, but Hayward belongs in that mix.
Let's just pretend that didn't get awkward for, you know, the reasons that everybody knows, but we're just going to leave unsaid. Okay, how many players deserve to be drafted? Can we say Hayward and Lowry deserve to be drafted?
I don't know. I don't know what Lowry we're going to get this year. I feel like this is, he's close to that area of his career where he starts to really slip. But I'm basing that on nothing but a gut feeling. So okay, if Lowry plays like he did last year, he's in. And it's Lowry, Hayward, Wall, Giannis, and LeBron, and Kyrie. So that's 7.
Okay, so let's flip it. I mean, DeRozan, I'm definitely not. No way. Yeah. Kevin Love, nah. Kemba Walker, nope. Bradley Beal, probably not. I doubt it. Al Horford, no. Maybe Porzingis or Embiid, especially Embiid if he plays, if he stays healthy. And then Isaiah, I think, would make it if he was healthy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even in the most charitable light, we can't even get to like eight names here. You know what I mean? So why are we sticking to this whole 12 thing? It drives me insane. And I kind of hope that what we have this coming season in 2018 is like a bridge to a better future where they just kind of phase it in. The whole draft thing kind of works. And then in 2019, they go the full Monty and they decide, okay, we're just going to open it up 24 players, you know, no conference alignment. Unfortunately, I feel like they're afraid to do that. Doesn't this solution kind of seem like a compromise that was made in a boardroom that leaves everybody unhappy? I kind of feel like that's what
absolutely
happened here.
The one thing that I wonder about is whether they're afraid to do that because officially acknowledging that 75% of the talent is in the West, or that taking 12 players from the East is a disgrace to the fan. You're cheating the fans at that point. I think officially acknowledging that is dangerous for the league because it's hard to do that and then not try to realign the playoffs a little bit or come 100%. Up with some new solutions.
100%, because I was all revved up and ready to go. The show is here. Like, this is a great first step. We've acknowledged it in the All-Star game. Now let's acknowledge it in the playoff bracket. And it is really hard to have it both ways. I mean, if you did go to the no conference in the All-Star game, that seems like a very implicit acknowledgement that the East is just lagging and it's been lagging for too long that they can't deny it anymore. And then the very next logical movement from, I think, the public side would be, let's change this playoff bracket. And the NBA seems to want to have no interest whatsoever in doing that. So they're avoiding a can of worms here. Unfortunately, they should have just, you know, took the plunge.
But yeah, and that's why you were excited. You were like, this is step one to just eradicating AAA altogether.
It was going to be a great day for Western Conference elitism. There's no doubt about exactly. it. I mean, I was going to be completely insufferable, and instead it backfired pretty hard on me.
Well, listen, take solace knowing that Adam Silver heard you. He was listening to Open Floor 2 weeks ago. He was probably listening more than I was, because when you explained your like hot take on what was going to happen, I kind of zoned out. And then it happened like 10 days later. So congrats to you, even though they didn't go the full way. And I will continue pretty much ignoring the All-Star game. But, you know.
Well, you know what? You want to know one other reason I'm not super happy about how this played out? Is because I set up that take by calling it a sharp take.
Yes.
And I was proven right. And that's not supposed to happen. A sharp take is supposed to only be right like one out of every 10 shots. I'm not supposed to be proven 100% accurate like 4 days later. So that really is the real reason why I'm a loser here, if you think about it. Because now it grants you this moral high ground of like knowledge and intellect that I'm not prepared for.
And I feel bad because you called it a sharp take and I still didn't listen to exactly what you were saying.
Whatever.
In my defense, it was a Sunday night and you had demanded that we do an emergency Carmelo pod and I was just sort of out of it. But
also in your defense, I mean, it's because I'm out here standing for Paul Millsap not being snubbed because he's in the Western Conference.
Right.
Like, I get it. Like, this is something that only a few people really care about.
Continuing on, though, to more NBA ideas that don't totally make sense. We never really talked about lottery reform. So our resident Kings fan, Atticus, sent us this email. With these lottery reforms, I sort of wished it would have happened like 5 years ago when the Kings were awful, but never the absolute worst. Also, that's when we had our picks. And then he continues on to defend Sam Hinkie and the concept of extreme tanking and the excitement that that can generate, and says the race to the bottom under Hinkie became a game that could be won with a certain level of certainty and the fans could root for it. Now the race has even less certainty of winning, and it's like the league is saying, just shut up and lose and don't enjoy doing so in the hopes of getting better in the future. So that was probably hard to follow, but what do you think? Because there are two ideas there. First of all, I think teams that have been just sort of ordinarily shitty over the last like 5 years, like the Kings and the Magic, I think the lottery reform is actually a win for them, because those are the organizations that could never get their act together to full tank the way they needed to. And the reforms could end up helping them. But what do you think about the lottery in general and what's happening?
I think it's so funny that, you know, nerds like you get into the whole percentages of this and that when the NBA just hands Lonzo to the Lakers. I mean, isn't that the bigger problem? I predicted this year's draft order months in advance, didn't I? I mean, no, I'm playing for you conspiracy theorists out there. I'm just joking. I think that your column on this was pretty much right. I don't think it really changes that much. It certainly kind of just moves the bar for where the incentives are to try to lose on purpose. I think for this particular year, we have an especially deep crop of really, really bad teams, and I'm not sure that changing these odds in this minor way is going to dissuade any of them from just embracing how bad they are, playing their young guys, and losing in volume. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's more than three truly bad teams this year. It could be as many as five and six. And so from that standpoint, I think the stretch run will be as ugly or uglier than ever.
That's what I wonder about.
I hope to be proven wrong, but I mean, there was some very shameful behavior from front offices over the last 6 or 7 months. And, you know, it's all my favorite greatest hits, whether they're not doing anything this summer, where they're making terrible trades to get rid of stars, you know, just right on down the list. There's a lot of really bad teams, and you can't legislate those teams out of this, I don't think, unless you take a really radical solution. So I think it's a little too much ado about not very much here with this lottery discussion.
I think you are probably right. I wonder whether there's going to be more tanking after this. And it's just not a good sign when the NBA is coming up with rules that are like pretty, we don't know exactly how this is going to play out, but there's now a lot of incentive for teams like the Pistons or the Hornets last year or the Magic every year since 2010 to just like punt on the final 2.5 months. Because if they're going to increase the percentages to where like the sixth worst team in the NBA has a 30% shot at the top three, like everybody should try to be the sixth worst team in the NBA. And so in that respect, I'm not sure what the NBA was even trying to accomplish, because there's just going to be more crappy basketball. As far as Atticus's point about the Sixers, my thing with this, we don't need to go into a process argument 2.5 years later. I don't think what the Sixers were doing was as smart as it was advertised, but I totally agree that it was more interesting than being the Kings the last 5 years or the Magic or even like the Suns, like just going for it for a few years and trying to be as bad as you can and taking guys who are interesting is a big win. And sort of, or at least not, it didn't turn into any real win, but it gave fans something to talk about and to engage with, which is like more than you can say for the Hornets or the Pistons. The only other thing I will say is, even as much as I object to the lottery reform in like the idea of it and why they did it, I think they were trying to appease dumb people who don't really pay attention to the NBA anyways, and I don't think it's going to be effective. But despite those objections, I think the lottery itself is going to be a shit show next year, and it's going to be really exciting. And I will, by the time we make it to May and we're talking about like getting ready for the show and trying to gauge what's going to happen, I'll be all in, because it's going to be chaos.
Yeah. And the more you're talking about this, and okay, the Sixers experience probably went just about as good as it could have gone given the stars that they landed compared to some of these other teams that have really struggled, the more I kept coming back to this idea that I'm not sure you can tank your way to being a championship contender in the NBA that has developed here over the last, especially the NBA that's developed here in the last 12 months, where in their prime superstars have decided that they are going to control their destinies. They want to team up and they want to compete right now. And the loyalty factor to certain franchises that tanking teams are kind of hoping for, right? You're banking on that. If you're going to draft a guy at 19, you're just praying you can continue to re-sign him and build around him. If you don't have that kind of influence anymore, because your stars have realized they can drive their own careers, then good luck. Like, let's say Phoenix wins the number one pick the next 2 years. How confident are you that they're going to be able to keep those guys when they reach their prime if there's other, you know, markets out there? Same thing for Atlanta.
Yeah.
I'm not at all. I'm less confident than ever. And so I really think, like, Adam Silver's down here, like, kind of twiddling his thumbs and changing the percentages on a smaller issue where you have a much bigger haves versus have-nots issue developing. And I don't think he's got any solution for it. And I think it's only going to get worse, you know, next summer and beyond.
Yeah. I mean, my response to you, I think there's more to it than just winning a championship, because even rooting for guys like Ben Simmons and Embiid is a lot more fun than rooting for Dragon Bender and even like Devin Booker, but Dragon Bender and Marquese Chris. Like, there's just such a drop off after those top two or three, that are like Hazonia and Jonathan Isaac versus like legit stars, like Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball. So I support tanking at least in the abstract. But we should move on.
Yeah. I just think it's getting less and less effective, you know, because you, not only if you're going to tank and try to get like your core guys from the tanking, or trying to get one guy who's going to be a magnet for other star players, but
you're,
you
no,
have to allow
right.
that you have to allow that guy to develop over years and years. The odds of that actually working, to me, like the old Oklahoma City model of like Westbrook, Harden, and Durant, and that's how we're going to build. To me, that's just dead. I mean, that doesn't exist anymore.
That was gone. That was my issue with the process. If you're selling it as this is how you build a championship team, like, get out of my face. That's bullshit. But if you're saying this is actually just more interesting than doing it the other way and trying to be a six seed, then you're probably right. And I don't know.
Yeah, I guess where I fall on it is when they started the process, I think you could still talk yourself into it being a championship building method, like a pretty reliable one.
That's a good point.
And I think we've now come to a different NBA that I didn't even foresee. I'll be the first one to say it. I didn't see it was going to get this way this fast. And now I don't think that method will work.
Yeah. Well, one more thing on the lottery. Alex Hopper wrote in to say, I'm cribbing this from Shutdown Fullcast, but the NBA should have done what Ryan Nanny, Spencer Hall, and Jason Kirk suggested for the NFL. Each team send a player off their roster to the combine and have them participate in drills to determine draft order. Is this a good idea? No, but it'd be fun as hell to see teams go out and sign random athletes and only use them to increase their odds for a top pick. I support it, particularly if it's NBA teams sending guys to the NFL combine and signing truly random athletes. I'd be all in. And I also just love Spencer Hall and Ryan Nanny and Jason Kirk. So the only real solution, if we're trying to fight tanking, and we're not taking the NFL combine idea, I think, is if you randomize the entire lottery.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at with some of the more drastic solutions, either randomizing it or making all the odds equal, or, you know, just getting rid of the draft, like you mentioned, you know, previously. And I just don't view it as that big of an issue.
Yeah. Tanking itself is not that big of an issue. The thing that I think would be cool if you randomize the lottery is you would have a lot of great young players ending up on like teams that can actually compete. Because like if you take a team like the Nuggets last year and give them a top three pick, I think that would be really cool versus throwing like Markelle Fultz in Philly, or throwing Lonzo to a Lakers team that's going to win another like 25 games this year. Like, that's not as fun as putting those guys in winning situations.
Well, and we did see the amount of intrigue that developed when a really good team like Boston got that number one pick. And now all of a sudden it's like in a position to sort of auction that pick off. What kind of player do they want? Are you trying to fit that top talent into a group that already exists? I mean, that was a really fun, stimulating discussion. I'm just not totally sure that's in the best interest of the league. But we'll see. Yeah. In terms of this, you know, having guys go to the combine, you know, I'm a humorless person that prefers gas mileage over flash. I think it's a bad idea.
Okay. Thank you for that. Thanks for weighing in. Aaron says, moving to real basketball stuff, other beyond news that we should have hit 10 days ago. Aaron says, should Cleveland play medium ball with no traditional point guard until Isaiah comes back? Start LeBron, Wade, J.R. Smith, Jay Crowder, Kevin Love. LeBron and Wade alternate bringing the ball up and initiating the offense, and they could switch well and space the floor reasonably well also. And they'd have a pretty legit second unit. What do you think about what Cleveland is trying right now?
Well, first of all, I don't think we should call it medium ball. I think we should call it interchangeable. And I think
this is a good time to mention that Colin Coward took LeBronzo. LeBronzo, is it?
Yeah, it's LeBronzo. You know it's LeBronzo. Stop pretending like you're not all in.
Yeah, Coward adopted that. So I don't know whether that's a compliment or something you should be embarrassed about, but LeBronzo is officially catching on.
Look, if I could be anything in this world, it would be a language influencer. You know, if I don't really care about being a style driver like Russell Westbrook. I realize that no one really wants to dress like me or whatever. If I could be a language influencer, a linguist.
Interchangeable.
And then I want to be a
linguist,
but influencer together into one word. Linguinfluencer. That's what I want to be.
Great.
Anyway, back to the Cavs and what they're trying to do. We are a little too punchy today. I like this idea of Kevin Love into the starting lineup. I mean, I think they were getting dangerously close to not enough shooters around LeBron, and it was going to become one of those situations where, into the starting lineup as a center, by the way, and Tristan out, they were getting dangerously close to one of these situations where their bench was going to obviously outperform the starters, and it was just going to be awkward. I don't think that's ever necessarily good. Mm-hmm. I think, like I mentioned before, they're just in hold down the fort mode until Isaiah gets back, and that's going to lead to some probably pretty cringe-inducing games where they just try to win shootouts, they don't care about defense, and you know we're all looping Derrick Rose, low lights. I do think limiting Rose's impact on the rotation is generally a good thing. I wouldn't necessarily be having Wade do a lot of the ball handling. I'm not really on board with that. But I do think that basically the priority should be shooting around LeBron. That is a proven formula. They showed last year down the stretch they can win lots of games even if they do not care at all about defense. And since they're just trying to buy time, that's what I would try to do. Just go all out with the offense, as many threes as possible, and you know just relax until Isaiah comes back in January. On defense,
it's a good point. I think the Cleveland is going to be solid regardless. I don't think anybody up there is too stressed about how this plays out the first few months. The thing that I wonder about big picture, and Zach Lowe made this point on a podcast earlier this week, is like if you're bringing Tristan Thompson off the bench, he's not quite as useful because the things he does well defensively, like there aren't going to be very many great players that he's going to be neutralizing, and then he doesn't add a whole lot either. So I'm not sure what their plan is there. But the reason I included this question is because you earlier this week were talking about something to me, said you think this year we could see like more extreme small ball than we've ever seen before. And I'm curious because, I mean, Kevin Love at center is pretty extreme, and like Jay Crowder power forward, like, what do you think? What? Explain yourself.
Yeah, I just think it's sort of a natural evolution. What we see during the finals a lot are these lineups where basically it's just 10 guys who are listed at 6'9 and shorter. You basically have like Durant and LeBron as the functional centers. And when you have talent, especially scoring talent, I think the smaller you go, and the more often that other teams are finally admitting like big isn't working and we're going to go small too, you have a better chance of just running them off the court, playing faster, scoring more than they do by getting as many shooters on the court as possible. Like the best lineups from an efficiency standpoint last year for Cleveland was just LeBron plus as many shooters as possible, take any non-shooter off the court and they're good to go. And the easiest way to do that is to dump guys like Tristan Thompson, who's not even really a traditional center, but it's just like get him out of there. And I don't think only Cleveland and Golden State has figured this out. Like, I think Boston's going to have figured this out. I think Houston, certainly with their offseason moves in terms of all the wings they added, I think they're going to figure it out. Like, they can play big and kind of use a guy like Capella in that DeAndre Jordan, like, lob-catching mold. But I think they're also going to be able to get out there where they have lineups of five guys who are all 6'9 and shorter, and all of them can shoot, and some of them can shoot from, like, 5 feet behind the three-point line. And they're really going to blow teams' minds. And if you're matching up with them, you're going to have to make a lot of tough decisions. And you're not going to be able to keep a center on the court if they have five shooters that spread out. So I think it's just kind of this copycat natural evolution type syndrome where it's just going to keep getting smaller and smaller. So interchange the ball. I'm all for it. I love it. I love the concept. And I hope that is sort of where the NBA goes. I mean, I think people will start to say, oh, it looks more like soccer if it keeps going direction.
Well, but I think that's a good thing for the sport. I think it's only going to make basketball more entertaining as you take some of the less skilled guys off the court. And that's kind of what I'm curious about, is whether we look back in 10 years amazed that a dude like Andre Drummond was ever getting 35 minutes a game. And maybe big men are going to be coming off the bench like specialists. Like, people will sort of, it'll be like a Hannibal Lecter situation where you bring a guy in for like 15 minutes and everybody just gawks. And then beyond that, it's just everybody is 6'8".
Yeah, I mean,
I'd be into
the very
that.
Best teams. No, I think that's kind of where we're heading. And like at the highest level, like I said, that's where it's been. You know what I mean? Like the best teams, Golden State, for example, like they throw Zaza out there just to kind of like butter you up, to like soften you up, right?
It and almost feels like okay, they're just trying to be diplomatic about it. And then they take him out after 5 minutes.
Yeah, totally. And then, you know, then they drop the pretenses and they put in five guys who are all playmakers who can all play defense, right? And the problem is nobody else around the league has five offensive playmakers who can also play defense. That's the big issue we've got right now. But teams are trying to get there. I mean, you look at the true contenders, they are going that direction. They're trying to get as many playmakers who can also hold their spot defensively as possible. And that is the ideal world where, you know, everybody can do something with the basketball. It's not just like catch and shoot specialists. It's guys who can spot up and also attack. And I think, you know, we're getting to a point where the talent has started to aggregate on so few teams that there's going to be some, you know, interesting head-to-head matchups here this season. And there's going to be a lot of teams that just have no chance when, you know, the elite teams go to these deadly lineups.
Okay, so speaking of no chance, the only other thing that I wonder about when you lay this out, because I think you're right. Like, you look at the finals, it matters that every finals is played this way. And like, it's almost weirder that things haven't changed more in the regular season. The thing I wonder about, though, is what do you do with a guy like where does a guy like Karl Towns or Embiid probably won't be healthy, but if Embiid were healthy, like, how do those guys fit into this new system? Because, I mean, well, Towns is a freak, and he belongs on the court 40 minutes a game regardless.
Yeah, no, and I don't know if you remember when we had to do that, like, what's the NBA going to look like in 2022 or whatever, that thought experiment for SI, and I jokingly said D'Antoni coaches Towns and Towns is the point guard. Like, that's what it's going to look like. But he's a shooter. He's a playmaker. He can put the ball down on the dribble and attack from the three-point line. Karl Towns is fine.
Right.
And offensively, he needs to figure out how to defend the rim and really be a paint presence. That's where he needs to work on. Embiid is already there on defense. And offensively, he's a playmaker too. I mean, he's comfortable around the three-point line, but he can also, you know, beat you basically anywhere. There are going to be a few guys that can still punish. You're not going to ever have a chance to defend with a 6'8 forward, right? There's going to be a few of those guys, but who are still able to shoot well enough where like their overall offensive output is still incredibly efficient. But there's a lot of guys, if you don't have 3-point range, it's going to be really, really tough.
I think
for a lot of these centers to remain relevant. And that's why we call these guys unicorns, because that's what everybody wants. I mean, Porzingis is in this category as well. But I think some of the other guys, if you're Miles Turner, you got to get that 3-point range locked in. You know, if you really want to be the type of impact sort of perennial all-star type player that your talent says you should be, you got to have a knockdown three-pointer, no doubt about it.
That's what I wonder about is, like, in theory, this should make the unicorns, basically we're eliminating 80% of the big men, but then the 20% that can stay should be more valuable than ever and maybe the most valuable players on the court. But we haven't really seen that yet because, you know, Steph is still the most valuable player on the court in the finals. Maybe LeBron's in the mix too. I shouldn't go overboard, but like
LeBron was definitely number one.
Yes, definitely number one. But it's still super perimeter oriented at the top of the league. Like the of the 10 most valuable, 7 are guards, and I wonder if that's going to shift. So we'll have to wait and see. Because We just haven't seen many of the unicorns translate to much winning. Even when you go think about like Anthony Davis and Porzingis hasn't won, Towns hasn't won, and I wonder when we're going to turn that corner. But for now, let's go to San Antonio and talk about the Spurs real quick. Weiger says, I know the banana boat will team up in San Antonio in 2018. But next season is looking kind of bleak. And then he lists the problems with the Spurs right now. No Kawhi Leonard in the preseason. No Tony Parker for most of the season. That's actually not true. I think he's probably going to be back by early December, the last I saw. But still, that's the first 6 weeks of the season. Aging Pau Gasol and Manu Ginobili. Unsatisfied LaMarcus Aldridge. Still on the roster. Likely having to play a lot of minutes at the five. With Joffrey Laverne replacing David Lee and Dwayne Dedman. Rudy Gay coming back from an Achilles tear, and no more Jonathan Simmons as the Band-Aid, and an even stronger season in the show. So I'm curious about your thoughts on the Spurs, because my instinct is to say none of this will matter and they will still be the two seed when at the end of the day.
Yeah, Spurs are going to be awesome. I mean, the Kawhi health thing is definitely a major crux. You know, they need him. And I think it sounds like they're just being careful with him. If that's the case, then they're fine. In terms of Parker and this and that, they have a lot of options at point guard, more than capable options. Patty Mills is one of the most underrated players in the league, at least in my eyes. I was never really banking on Parker for that much this season and still viewing them as sort of like a clear cut, you know, number two team in the Western Conference. So I'm not super worried about Parker's timeline. Did you see the article today about LaMarcus Aldridge clearing the air with Pop? It was pretty interesting. Okay, so Pop basically said, LaMarcus played elite defense, we're good. We can do more to involve him on offense. I thought that was incredible leadership from Popovich. I mean, honestly, that was kind of on my mind when I tried to take accountability earlier for my previous podcast disasters.
You're just trying to make Greg Popovich proud.
Well, yeah, because...
No, he was disappointed in the fantasy podcast, too. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah, no, but he is also owning Aldridge's struggles. He's he's looking inward for how he can make Aldridge better instead of trying to call Aldridge a choker who didn't step up in the Western Conference Finals, and I love that. And certainly they can do more to involve Aldridge. Is he ever going to be that number two guy that people really hope for in a contender, you know, title team? I don't think so. But they have enough firepower, and they can also still play so big and so long, especially if Gay gets healthy and on the court and he can play at some level of, good activity where they can just smother you defensively. They can put out some crazy lineups. They can put out some pretty crazy interchangeable lineups too, where, they've got 5 guys, 6'11 and under. Aldridge really is the only big, but the other 4 guys are kind of perimeter oriented defensively, where they can just really lock you down with their length. Remember, they were number one defense last year. They're the most disciplined team, period, in the league. And I think that's not going to change because of their age. You know, look at the guys who are older on that team. They didn't really hold their defense back last year. I don't think an extra year is going to make their defense any worse. So to me, they look stable. I don't know if they're going to win as many games as they did the last two seasons. I mean, both over 60 wins was, you know, super impressive. But I don't see any real cause for huge concern here or any reason to think that they're going to fall back. I do think Houston could potentially win more games in the regular season because their offense is just going to be lights out this year.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with what I saw in the preseason from the Rockets attack. But to me, you know, San Antonio is going to be right there, 2 or 3 seed.
Well, we're about to move to Houston. The only thing I'll say about the Spurs is that I agree with you for the most part, but the roster is really, you know, it's held together with scotch tape at this point, and it's been this way for a few years. It probably won't matter, but one of these years, it is going to matter, and everyone's going to be like, everyone's going to look up in January and realize that the Spurs are like headed for a 7th seed, and it's going to be...
Yeah, I just don't see it that way, because...
You don't think that's ever going to happen?
Well, not this year for sure. I mean, you're saying scotch tape, and I look at it and I see a whole lot of dudes that I can just pencil in who are going to give me offensive, awesome defensive effort and execution. You know, they're not playmakers. They're not bucket getters. They're
like
not sharp
Patty
all-stars.
Mills too, but come on. Patty Mills is still just Patty Mills. And like they're counting on Pau, who's like 35 years old, LaMarcus Aldridge, whose game has slipped each of the last few years. I'm just
saying you're being disrespectful. Don't we have a great Australian audience. Don't say just Patty Mills. Give this man his due. He earned his brand new contract. He played big minutes in the postseason. He is a absolute nightmare. I would not want to have him guard me. I mean, he used to be
Patty Mills is not
so
a nightmare. No one is having nightmares about Patty Mills.
You could not dribble the ball across the court if Patty Mills was picking you up full court. You couldn't even get to the midline, period.
What are you talking about? I don't.
He'd be
Patty
in
Mills
your jersey.
Is not a defensive
he'd be a nightmare.
All right.
Look, I'm not saying he's Patrick Beverley, but this guy is scrappy. He gets after it. He creates turnovers. He's in your jersey. He is making young point guards uncomfortable with his sheer activity, and I like that at the head of my defense.
I feel like you're
drastically underrating Patty Mills. He's also a great shooter, great stop and pop guy. Moves off the ball very well, fits into their culture, waves the towel, does everything you want. He's solid. Look, I know
stopping,
you're a little upset because I'm not gushing
full court
at Deontay
situation.
Murray.
Stopping me in a full court press situation is a pretty low bar, but I'm glad that Patty Mills can clear it. And I'm rooting for the Spurs. I want them to be awesome. I'm just saying that the concerns are real. Let's talk about the Rockets, though. We got an email from Khalil who says, a lot of people are talking about next year's MVP, and most have Durant, LeBron, and Kawhi as the favorites. I'm not hearing anybody discuss Chris Paul. I'm not saying I for sure think he's going to win or even want him to, Lonzo for MVP, but I think he's an underrated choice for 3 reasons. Firstly, it's CP3. He's in the conversation for MVP every year. Chris Paul is actually one of the most underrated players in the league and underappreciated players in the league. You were talking about Patty Mills like he's Chris Paul. You're insane. But continuing on with this email, he says, this year is different, however, because this year he's off the disappointing Clippers and the past playoff mishaps will be diminished in a new situation. D'Antoni's offense tends to elevate point guards, especially statistically. And thirdly, this is a contract year, not necessarily for Paul, but for the Rockets, who he could walk away from next year. I think the Rockets are going to do everything they can to keep him in the fold, including giving him the keys to the offense whenever and however he pleases. I'm also posting this as a 5-star review to make sure you read it. What do you guys think? Well, his game worked. I don't think Chris Paul is legitimately an MVP candidate this year, but I am really curious. Like, the Rockets could come out and just be fucking awesome for the next 6 months.
Yeah, I'm still hung up on the Spurs thing, to be honest. I'm going to get to the Rockets in a second, but I want to design a fantasy sports game that reflects basketball IQ and heart, because in that scenario, you're going to have guys like Slow-Mo, Bertans, Patty Mills. All these guys are just going to score off the charts, and you're going to finally appreciate what they do for a team like San Antonio. There are no concerns. They're going to be wonderful. In terms of Chris Paul, MVP, no chance. I mean, we've seen the stigma and the backlash when guys leave teams that first year. You just don't win it. If LeBron can't win it and KD can't win it, and granted, there was injury concerns with KD, but he wasn't going to win it even if he was healthy, right? How is Chris Paul going to jump on Houston and win? I think that's just going to take him out. Secondly, though, and I think more importantly, he looks like a really good fit. I don't know if you're watching the preseason, but these guys are generating more threes than ever. They're better looks than ever. The ball is moving just the same. All this ball stopper talk, which always comes up with stars and is sometimes warranted, hasn't really seemed to be a concern There's a little chemistry already I've seen between Chris Paul and James Harden in terms of setting each other up. These guys just put so much pressure on your defensive awareness because as soon as they cross half court, they're looking to pitch the ball out for a three-pointer, and they've got tons and tons of guys who can shoot it. I think Chris gets it. You know, I think there was a lot of talk last year about the marriage between D'Antoni and Harden in terms of, do they see eye to eye? Are they going to be able to merge their basketball philosophies? They did. I think you can say the exact same thing already about Chris Paul and D'Antoni. I think he gets it. Hopefully that will translate to the playoffs. It really never has. I'm still skeptical that it will with this group, just because of how they kind of bombed out in the second round last year. But in terms of like regular season point totals, win totals, Chris Paul's stats, I know we were talking his fantasy numbers on the last episode. I think that's all going to be good. I think all NBA second team is possible for Chris Paul. I just don't see MVP conversation.
Yeah. I think second team might be asking a little bit much at this point. The league is just so deep at the guard spot. But I'm with you. I think that the deal with both OKC and Houston is the same, where they have so much firepower that a lot of legitimate fit concerns won't be a big deal until like either the first or second round of the Western Conference playoffs. I still wonder how Chris Paul and James Harden will navigate the end of a close game together. But at the same time, like Houston, I watch them and I really am like, look, these guys have cracked the code to basketball. Where they
And we can't say that about OKC though. That's the thing.
I don't think
we should compare these two. Because one has a structure and a system that drops your jaws, and they can do it every single night during the regular season. And what is OKC's structure and system? I don't know what that is.
That's true, but OKC also has more talent than Houston because they do.
Oh, come on.
Who does Houston have beyond Chris Paul and James Harden? I mean, like PJ Tucker, the idea of PJ Tucker is a lot better than the real thing. Trevor Ariza has been washed up for 2 years now. Clint Capella
he has not been washed up for 2 years.
We're not
going
to go back into
great
Trevor
minutes.
I'm just saying, like, Houston doesn't have quite as many horses as OKC.
But you've failed the first test, which is we're looking at the whole being greater than the sum of the parts, and you're signaling out each individual part. These guys are in a system that covers up their weaknesses and plays to their strengths, and they've been hand-selected based solely on their strengths, which is usually three-point shooting, right? Mm-hmm. And in a lot of cases, perimeter defense. They're being set up for success, and I'm wondering, does Oklahoma City's current, what I view as sort of a mishmash, set up its best players for success, and does it set up its role players for success, or does it create a situation where everybody loads up on the stars and all of a sudden Robertson's airballing a three-pointer with Chris Paul waving his hand at him from 15 feet away because it's a joke that he's even shooting, right? Like, I think there's a real contrast there between...
You're not wrong. I'm just saying that when you compare them to the rest of the league, they're in a different category. Houston got there for different reasons than OKC, but OKC has a lot more talent than most of the teams they're going to be playing every night. And Houston is smarter and better stylistically than the teams they're going to be dealing with. And it's going to be an adventure for both teams in the playoffs because, look, Chris Paul and Harden both have like real playoff question marks over the years. And then, you know, OKC, you've raised your Thunder objections, okay? It's clear that you don't think this is going to work. What I'm telling you is it's definitely going to be fine in the regular season.
Yeah, I think it might look a little uglier than you think in the regular season, but we'll see.
Between San Antonio, Houston, and OKC, how do you see that shaking out?
I mean, OKC to me is clearly fourth. I think Houston, San Antonio will be determined largely by San Antonio's health.
They could have an awesome rivalry the next few years.
Yeah, well, actually, if you've heard of David Robinson, Hakeem Olajuwon, these are two organizations.
Yeah, sorry. I sounded a millennial there. My bad.
They actually have had a pretty good rivalry in the past.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't mean to be that big of a jerk, although I kind of meant like half of it. But look, I think Houston has a real chance to win 60-plus. Harden's never done that in his career. Paul's never done that in his career, so that would be kind of cool. With San Antonio, I think, you know, high 50s for sure. And I think they can get over 60 if the health plays well. So I guess if gun to my head, now that I'm thinking about this over the course of this podcast, I'd probably say Houston is the two seed. But, you know, to me, it's kind of San Antonio's spot to lose.
Yeah, I think Houston probably will be the two seed and is also the team I'm least confident in to make it to the conference finals. And I also, we're not going to get into it, but I still am, I'm not ready to write the Wolves out of this conversation just because Jimmy Butler is that good. But we'll see. They really have no shooting. And beyond the stars, it gets kind of dicey. But quick question from Brock. He says, in light of the Kevin Durant bots, who's your first team all social media and who is first team all corny? Do you have any nominations here?
Well, you care more about this than I do, so you go first.
Okay, so first team all corny is like Dwight Howard is the Michael Jordan of corniness. I don't think we'll ever see another Dwight Howard. Kevin Durant is definitely the clear number two. And then I had every team Twitter account in this mix. Basically, there's just not a single NBA Twitter. Like they all try to have personality and post memes, and it's just the corniest shit in the world. LeBron James is corny, but he's also on my first team all social media. But you can't have a conversation about NBA corniness and not recognize LeBron. And then the other one that I struggled with was Carmelo Anthony. I'm beginning to worry about he's just a little too into the hoodie joke. Like, it was definitely fun for like an August stretch of NBA news, but he needs to take it down a notch on the hoodies with every public appearance.
That's a great point, because there is a fine line between leaning in and then just face planting. And
yeah.
I realized that during the fantasy basketball podcast. I just face planted. I was too far leaning in. I do think that we should give Carmelo an exemption, though. He's doing a great job raising money for Puerto Rico here. So let's give it up. Stay mellow, at least for this week, and give him that exemption.
Not only that, every single time he posts the stay mellow hashtag with 7 instead of L, I laugh every single time he does that. And I love that he's been dedicated to that for the last few years. I hope he keeps it going. And
relate to that too, because it's kind of like my manual retweet. You know, I'm the last person on earth still manually retweeting.
He's not willing to let it go, and I respect it. The only thing, it's really strictly a hoodie situation. He needs to just let the hoodie joke go.
Yeah. Well, doing it at Media Day, I thought should have been the last act,
yes.
Though. You know, it's kind of funny to show up and wear something silly for your official photo and then just go with it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So any other corny nominations?
I mean, to be honest, not really. I don't follow a lot of these guys because they're corny. So
I
filter it.
this is a good, it's a good reason to stay off Twitter, because I also considered Joel Embiid and CJ McCollum, two people. I've never met CJ McCollum, but I'm sure I would have a lot of fun with him. And I've hung out with Joel a couple times talking to him, and he's great in person, but every Joel Embiid tweet kind of annoys me, and every like viral CJ McCollum tweet kind of annoys me.
Well, about 6 months ago, I told you that about Joel Embiid, and you reacted astonished that I would suggest such a thing. I'm glad to see you came over to the good side. I appreciate that.
Nice. First team all social media. I have three quick nominations.
Okay.
Evan Turner, definitely like nothing but realness from the Evan Turner Twitter account for the last like 8 years. LeBron James definitely deserves some love here for just the nonstop stream of entertainment on his Instagram stories and just the sheer ridiculousness of the last 5 years of his internet usage. I appreciate it, even if a lot of times he's not really in on the joke. And then Boris Diaw's Instagram.
All very predictable and thumbs up. I mean, I can't say I'm surprised by any of your picks. Maybe I know you a little too well. Maybe we just need to dig deeper for these kinds of questions in the future. Find some under the radar, you know, up and comers. But, you know, I think you did fine.
Good. Let's move on to a question for you. Miguel.
Oh, by the way, though, Boris Diaw is not in the NBA anymore, so you can't include him. I mean, you ended his career with the whole coffee shop interview. He's done. So you're going to have to update your list here. You're going to have to maybe do a little unfollowing, a little new follows. I don't know what it is. But
you know what, man? I'm trying to track Boris Diaw down for an interview for a story I'm working on before the season. And since that podcast, he has stopped responding to my emails. So I don't know whether he's listening and he just connected all the dots, but hopefully we can broker a truce somehow. And so I can Skype with him from France, but you're correct. Still, he's a lifetime achievement award, social media wise. Miguel has a question for you. He says, I really want to understand more of how defenses actually work. I enjoy NBA basketball greatly, but I know the defensive part of the game somewhat escapes me. So which teams and players should I keep an eye on to learn how to appreciate defense and why?
Boy, people might turn off this podcast if I go on for too long here. I was already gushing about San Antonio's discipline earlier.
I can't tell whether were you serious about all that?
Oh, yeah, of course. No, I mean, look.
I don't know what to say. Notice, if you're really, serious about Patty Mills being that good.
No, I'm not saying he's like the world's greatest, but he tries really hard. He does his job. He sticks with it. He doesn't give up on plays. He pulls himself up off the court. He doesn't, you know, relax on the baseline for 15 seconds, Dwayne Wade style, after he misses a layup.
Okay.
He's into it. He helps make his teammates better, and it's really easy to see that on offense. You know, guys like LeBron, Ben Simmons, they have this crazy vision. They make their, you know, they set up wide open shots for their teammates.
Mm-hmm.
But making your, you know, covering for your teammates defensively, whether it's with help, sliding over to take charges, covering their guy, you know, bumping somebody as they're running through the lane, that's another way to make your teammates better, and I appreciate that. I think San Antonio and Utah are the teams that you want to start with in terms of appreciating defense. Unfortunately, you're probably going to give up after a few hours of it because it's not really that exciting. There's not a huge highlight payoff. Even the block shots a lot of times aren't resulting from the best plays. You know, there's sort of a certain randomness to it. If you're playing great defense, you're not giving up wide open dunk opportunities. Those types of, above the rim highlights don't necessarily start with San Antonio, though. It's really not that hard. I mean, if you want to watch a team that's totally locked in, that moves as like a five-person organism, that, you know, five fingers make a fist is what they always say. That's sort of what a good defense does. That's where I would start.
My answer, a serious answer to this question would be watch teams that are awful on defense. Like watching the Wolves last year, watching Suns games for the last 5 years, watching the Blazers. God, I saw like some just dreadful Blazers games the first 4 months of the season. Then you will appreciate defense. You notice it when it's not there. And beyond that, the way to appreciate how it works is to watch smart people like Ben Golliver and Zach Lowe and Mike Prada like break down like clips of defense and rotations. But if you're watching for that shit in real time, you're kind of like missing the point with basketball. Everybody enjoys different things, but watch the worst defensive teams and you'll come to appreciate a team like the Spurs, five fingers.
Yeah, the other thing I'd say is like the NBA, the average scoring in an NBA game last season was the highest it's been since 92. So this is not the time to watch defense. You know, if you want to really like watch defense, go back to some of the more boring eras.
Go back to 1997 and you'll be set.
And I feel horrible. I feel horrible even admitting it, but it's true. And then in terms of how to watch a bad defense and then learn from that is just see who's getting their finger pointed at and who's making the coaches' kind of blood vessels go crazy. Usually it's the bigs on bad teams. You just don't know where they're supposed to be.
Yeah. All right. Podium. First question from Duncan. He says, if it were possible to create, would Ben join a fantasy league where all the categories were advanced stats?
I wanted to know, does this exist? Because are you in a dumb fantasy league, or are all fantasy leagues dumb? That was my question.
I think they're all dumb. I'm pretty sure they're all dumb. And we also got Sam says, some advice for you guys. I love the pod and love what you guys do. Please never do a fantasy pod again. So we shouldn't belabor this too much. But
Sam, we're on it. No, I mean, I just think there are some clear adjustments they could make. Like, why don't they use true shooting percentage instead of field goal percentage? Why isn't real plus minus a thing at all? That seems like that would be a place to kind of go towards.
I'm cutting you off. Okay. I'm cutting you off. look, if anyone wants to discuss actual dumb fantasy questions, like there's stuff that I cut where like I wanted to debate Dion Waiters versus Malcolm Brogdon versus Austin Rivers and like Brandon Wright, Jonathan Simmons on the Magic. So if anyone, hit me up on Twitter. We can talk about it there, or we'll get a real fantasy guest. But I will say, one day we're going to convince you to cross over, but I'm not going to let you convince other people to create advanced stat fantasy leagues.
Yeah, another way to measure good defense is actually how much space three-point shooters get these days. I think that's another thing that I should just to bring it back.
Oh man, should we just
three-point percentage against is a great measure of really good defenses because everybody's trying to shoot threes, so you're trying to take away their threes.
You're the worst.
Yes, there's a little bit of like volatility in that number, but yeah, if your team doesn't give up a lot of open three-pointers, you're probably doing it right.
All right, next question. Tim says, guys, I love the name of your podcast. Every good podcast has a double entendre in the name. Breakaway is my favorite pod name. I'm curious, what other names did you toy around with for your pod? By the way, if Ben ever starts his own national park podcast, he should call it Gulliver's Travels. How, I included this question for two reasons. How often throughout your life have people made Gulliver puns to you?
I've never gotten it before. That's the first time was this emailer. No, I get it like two times a day, Andrew, obviously. Come on now.
It would definitely be the worst part about being named Gulliver.
No, I mean, Matt Dollinger tried to make that one of our, like every year I was doing a photo diary during the playoffs, you know, so he tried to have Gulliver's Travels as a headline one year, and I was like, come on, dude, you got to do better than that. I will admit, we didn't even come up with our name, though, did we? Open Floor? I don't think that was ours.
No.
I think we inherited that.
We inherited it. We briefly toyed around with renaming it, and I searched through my Gmail for our horrible name ideas in the past, and I couldn't find them. But
yeah, I don't think I was involved in that conversation. I will admit, though, when I was thinking about starting a Blazers podcast, I almost named it the Petri Dish after Jeff Petrie.
God, dark times. dark times for you, for the Blazers, for everybody. Wow.
Yeah, no, I know. That was a narrow miss. I mean, anyone's free to have that name, Petri Dish. Feel free to take it. But,
yeah. I will admit that I did this podcast for like a year and a half and didn't realize that Open Floor was a double entendre until like March. Until one day I looked at the logo and I was like, oh, it's like an open floor, but it's also like, I didn't think about, I knew it. I understood the basketball connotation, but not the regular connotation.
Got it. Well, I don't want to make you feel bad about that. So I'm going to try to segue into the next question.
It was so embarrassing to say that out loud. Let's just move on. We were already over time. So one question at the end here from Colin Lee. He says, I'm a neuroscience PhD student and I need to respond to Michael Beasley. I need you guys to educate the masses. Not even going to get into the high philosophy 101 comments. But the idea that we only use 10% of our brains is completely false and not at all the scientific consensus. We absolutely use every neuron and every connection in our brain. If we didn't, then those things would have died off, much in the same way that muscles shrink when one stops working out. The brain is far and away the most energetically costly part of the brain. Something like 2/3 of the energy we burn goes toward it. So if 90% of it didn't need to be used, then that would be a huge, huge waste. What do you think, Ben?
I got to say, huge thanks to Colin for laying out the facts of the matter. I mean, nothing drives me worse than media members who stoop to scrape the bottom of the barrel on crazy conspiracy theories, whether it's about the physics of the globe or the usage of the brain. I think, you know, certain people, I'm not going to name any names, have gotten pretty shameless in recent weeks doing that. And I'm really glad that Colin is here to stand on the right side of history in favor of truth and in favor of science. What do you think, Andrew?
I'm not entirely, the jury is still out as far as I'm concerned. Michael Beasley was making a lot of sense the other day, but I am, no, jokes aside, I am super pumped that we have PhD students listening to us, neuroscience students enduring the stupidity on this podcast. And the Beasley thing does remind me, though, we got about 8 emailers writing in to tell me the name of that movie that I couldn't remember last week, Lucy, starring Scarlett Johansson. And as I was going through the emails before the show today, I found myself watching the trailer to Lucy, thinking about Michael Beasley as the main character. And it, like, I might rewatch the entire movie with Beasley in mind. And it was just a transformative experience. So shout out to the movie Lucy. Before we go, we're gonna end on the trailer. So do you have any final words before we go?
No, I'm definitely not going to go see the movie for the first time or the second time. Andrew, I'm going to talk to you next week. Good luck with your movie.
That's right. Preview season starts next week. We're going to do our 5 favorite teams and the three teams we don't care about. So that, look forward to that on Tuesday. Hit us up on iTunes or at openfloormail@gmail.com with questions. And shout out to Lucy, shout out to Michael Beasley, and neuroscience students everywhere.
5-star reviews, ben.golver on Instagram. Andrew, I'll talk to you.
All right, man. Peace.
Hey. You speak English?
No, no, no.
You speak English?
Yes, yes.
Take me to the hospital now.
Hospital.
Somebody put a bag of drugs inside me. I need you to take it out. It's leaking.
It is estimated most human beings only use 10% of the brain's capacity. Imagine if we could access 100%. Interesting things begin to happen. Yes?
Professor Norman, my name's Lucy. I just read all your research on the human brain. It's a little rudimentary, but you're on the right track.
Thank you.
I have access to 28% of my cerebral capacity. I can feel every living thing.
Since when did you start writing Chinese?
Since an hour ago.
What happens when she reaches 100%?
I have no idea.
All this knowledge, you can unlock secrets that go beyond our universe. I'm not even sure that mankind is ready for it.
It's like all things that make me human are fading away.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.